Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Uber announced the new feature that lets women riders be paired with women drivers, and likewise men with men. You still can't take full water bottles through security at the airport yet. And United Airlines has made some awesome additions to its app that will make airport connections a little easier. Those stories next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we have a check-in list for your cruise ship cabin. Make certain you have what you need before the ship sails.
Road reporter Clayton Whitehead just returned from Switzerland and has a variety of tips, ideas, and suggestions for your Swiss trip at 11:35.
Mark has also been out on the road with a group of sports leisure vacationers. He has reviews and tips on Fort Bragg and Puget Sound coming up at 11:50.
This is the radio show that makes you a smarter traveler. Welcome to The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys with Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. Thanks for joining us here a little bit before, a little after 11 and before noon here on a fine Saturday morning. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Links to our special guests and so much more to make you a smarter traveler. Well, hi, how you doing, Mark? Welcome back from Puget Sound up there in Washington. How was the weather?
Oh, spectacular. I know it was a good week down here in Sacramento, very unusual in the 80s sort of week for the summertime, but my goodness, Puget Sound is just such a magnificent place to visit. If you haven't ever been there, you need to go. It's you can go up and rent a car and drive over to Puget Sound through Tacoma, or you can take a ferry boat to lots of places on the Sound. And in fact, later on in the program, we'll double back and talk a little bit about our trip and give you some ideas. There's really just, if it's a place you haven't been to yet, there's no excuse. There are three airlines that serve Seattle from Sacramento, so fares are competitive. There are lots of ways to get there and get home. And Puget Sound is just, it's really one of the best places to visit in the summertime on the planet.
There you go, and really not that far away from us here in Sacramento. We are the Travel Guys in the Top Very Brad broadcast program. We bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with today's edition of the Travel News, once again, here's Mark.
This is kind of weird. We talked about this a little bit last week, but it's going to come to fruition, apparently. There's going to be a new $250 Visa integrity fee that's going to be added to what people have to pay to get their already visa fees to get into the country. This is going to be an additional fee. So, for example, workers who are coming in like seasonally or something like that already pay $205 as an application fee. So now it's going to be $455. We have the Olympics and the World Cup coming up in this country in the next couple of years. So we are really looking to gear up and in being attractive to international travelers. So we've added a $250 Visa integrity fee and cut the number of dollars that our travel marketing firm for overseas has by 80%. So I have no idea what's going on, but normally at this point in time you would be trying to do things to attract visitors to your country. Especially with those two big events, we are not sure if that's what we're doing or not.
what are we, an airlines or something? We're trying to find every way we possibly can to gaff another couple of bucks out of travelers, people coming to our country.
We really want you to come here for these major events, but first we'd like to piss you off and take all of your money. Anyway, I truly don't get it, but perhaps it will all work out in the end. It's just it's kind of an interesting dilemma. Of course, it represents a lot of revenue that can be collected from incoming visitors. And they say that there is a way, they're going to have a way for visitors to be able to get this $250 back.
Oh, yeah, sure.
After they're done, you know, if they leave on time and they follow the rules and stuff like that. So I'm not sure how that's all going to work. And it also seems to me like that would also create an expense. And if you're giving all the money back, now you're going to have something negative instead of something positive.
Is this something that has been I'm not an international traveler. Is this something that occurs in other countries when we travel abroad? Are we being...
There generally are visa fees to travel to most countries on the planet. There's something involved even electronically in processing a visa application and having customs people at the border to make sure that that the right people are getting in and what you're bringing into the country is appropriate and all of those things. So there are certainly costs connected with people moving from country to country. I mean, even if it's United States and Canada, remember those people in Canada? We used to be really great friends with them. I don't know what so much now, but even when you're moving from a friendly country to a friendly country, somebody has to be there to make sure that everything stays friendly and that what's going on is above lawful. So I guess we've decided for some reason that $250 will keep bad people who have bad intentions from coming here. And the good people will get it back, but they'll probably have to jump through a couple of hoops, which undoubtedly will not make them very happy with us again, and also will cost us some money. Again, I've been in the travel business for a long time, and none of this makes any sense to me. But when you think about the fact that most of it is being done by people who are not in the travel business or even in the industry, I mean, to me, taking Brand USA and telling them instead of $100 million to promote the country, you get $20 million – and I know a little bit about this, so I know where that money gets spent. International inbound travelers are a huge import for this country. People spend a lot of money here. So we want them to come and spend as much money as possible. Now, having said that, we also want them to leave when it's time for them to leave and go back to where it is that they live. So, I mean, there certainly are two sides to every issue, but it just seems like we're putting a lot of barriers in front of people, which is already going to change their attitude before they get here. I don't know. I'm not an international travel expert or a passport expert, so we'll move on to the next story. United Airlines, which I think already has the best mobile app of any of the major carriers. It's remarkable how many things that app can do. And if you fly United Airlines and you don't already have that app on your phone, I can't imagine why that would be, but you need to do it. And even if you only fly United occasionally or you don't fly United at all, you might want to put it on your phone because someday you might get somewhere and your flight on American is canceled and you need to know how you can get home. And the United app is really a good way to do that. They've added something now called Connection Saver Notifications. You don't sign up for this. This is something that you just get as a part of their app services. If you are, let's pretend you're landing in an airport and now it's only 25 minutes before your connecting flight departs and you're in Denver. And so now you're going to get a notification, perhaps, that says, okay, here is the best way to get to where you're going. And it's going to take this long for you to get off the plane and get there. And we're holding this plane for 10 minutes in order for you to get there. Now, you might not be the only person that they're holding the plane for. In my case, you might be holding the plane for 25 people, which I'm going to suggest to you is something you don't want to leave 25 people behind. The logistics of that are complicated. So here's another example of United Airlines, this Connection Saver thing. I suspect other people will follow it quickly. And if so, that'll be a really good thing for travelers. So if you've traveled United Airlines, just know that they're using AI to identify flights that can be held for connecting passengers without significantly delaying the overall schedule. This will particularly apply to the last flight of the night because in most cases, that plane is getting to the other end, let's say Sacramento, and not going anywhere until morning. So if it's not doubling back as a red eye somewhere, then the fact that plane is 15 minutes late getting on the ground because they waited for some people in Denver or Chicago or Dulles or wherever is not significant. Anyway, I think that's an excellent additional customer service from United Airlines. Speaking of an excellent additional customer service from airlines, American Airlines, the headline from USA Today says, will let some passengers skip the customs line at this airport. Travelers connecting from the United Kingdom through American Airlines hub in Dallas will now have a much smoother travel experience. And I mention this because they're talking about this for all over the country. It's a security program that lets connecting passengers clear customs at the gate. They don't have to have their bags rescreened. They don't have to, you know, if people who travel internationally, frequently you have to get your bag, go through customs, make your declaration, get approved by the customs people, go and get your bag back into security, and now get to your departure date. Gate. All of that can take an extended period of time. What American is doing is saying, because of our security system, we don't have, you don't have to claim that bag and rescreen it. We're going to get it through security for you.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was something that would save time. So once again, the previous story, we're talking about United improving their app and knowing how competitive the airlines are, that perhaps other airlines will pick up on that. Let's help people make tight connections by giving them a little information and maybe holding the plane for a few minutes. So here's American saying that here's a way we can improve service for international inbound passengers from one destination at one airport. But psst, I will tell you that in the background, they're talking about doing this at all airports all over the country so that international inbound and outbound passengers will not have as much difficulty. This applies to us, because we have to leave when we're going overseas, and we have to come back, hypothetically. So, and when you come back, if you've got a connecting flight, then that's always a concern. And if you're coming back to Sacramento, you always have a connecting flight internationally, unless you're coming on Air Canada from Canada. Here's a cool story. Uber is going to let women request women drivers and men request male drivers. Basically, this is so that women can avoid being paired with guys, if that's what they do not want. They're going to pilot the program in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Detroit starting next month. And if it works, then they hope to be able to roll it out within 6 months. So ladies will only have to travel with ladies. And I'm not a lady, so I don't know how that important that is. But obviously, it must have come up or Uber wouldn't be trying it.
Yeah, for sure. No, it makes a lot of sense. It'll show right up there on your Uber app. It'll say, what would you like?
autonomous taxis are the future all over the country. They're showing up all over the place now. People who go to San Francisco say they see them all the time. They're apparently not perfect. They have a tendency to occasionally drop you off a half a block early, a half a block late. Tom, what we need to do, one of us needs to go to San Francisco and take a couple rides in one of these taxis.
When we went to the Giants game on the Sports Leisure Vacations bus, everybody was staring out the window at the self-driving cars as they go zipping by.
Oh, what a great idea. I'll just get Tyler, my tour director for baseball, when he goes down there on Sunday, I'll just tell him, hey, dude, before the ball game, hop in a driverless and then come back and give us a thank you for that. That's a great idea. Anyways, those are showing up all over the country increasingly, and not perfect yet, but no stories of people getting incredibly smushed on a regular basis, so I guess that's a good thing. Here's something. Are autonomous wheelchairs the future of airport mobility? You know, one of the most expensive things at an airport is the cost of people moving, the human cost of humans to move humans in airports. So what if you had a wheelchair that it just showed up and you sat down in it and you plugged in what gate you were supposed to go to and off it went? This is already happening, apparently. I was just in the Seattle airport twice this week, and I looked around to see if I could find one because Alaska Airlines is using them. We were on Southwest, different part of the airport, so I didn't see one. There are some pictures here online. But anyways, it's entirely possible that the next time you request a wheelchair, that you will get in one that will take you to your gate, and there will be no person involved. So at least you'll save the gratuity from the wheelchair pusher, and the airline will save, I guess, a lot of money. And finally, last item here before we go, TSA isn't ready to allow water bottles nationwide. Some security experts are saying that the possibility of some of our security folks in the administration have indicated that this might be right around the corner. Security people say not so much. Perhaps you might see it at selected airports, God, that would be confusing. You could get on the plane with the bottle of water, but you couldn't get come home with a bottle of water or something like that. Anyway, they do say it's coming. Right now, the new machines would take about 15 years for every airport to get one. But apparently there's some kind of a speed-em-up thing going on. So we might see that within a couple of 3 years, at least at selected airports. You wouldn't have to pour your water out before you went through security. And that's your travel news for today.
Yeah, and that was a technical term, Mark, throughout there, a speed-em-up thing. We gotta have one of those. My wife wants one of those. All right. Hey, how much did you spend on your last fast food order, huh? It's not unusual for two people to spend well over $30. Instead of just eating, how about dining out instead? Especially at Rudy's Hideaway Lobster House, the place in Sacramento for fresh seafood and hand-cut steak since 1970. It's been a special for around here for these parts. I'll tell you, everybody loves it. Whether you want the prime rib and scampi, which is now their fee. Oh, did I tell you, Mark? They got to do the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
You only got, another week. It's the prime rib and scampi special. Yeah, featuring your delicious herb-crusted, slow-roasted choice aged prime rib, large shrimp sautéed with garlic, white wine and capers. Your dinner also includes warm San Francisco sourdough bread and butter, fresh asparagus, and a baked potato the way you like it, all for only $34.95. Barely get you a meal at McDonald's. Think about it. Makes me want to head right over right now.
You're drooling.
I can hardly speak. Highway 50 in Hazel and Rancho Cordova, Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House, and be sure to tell them that the Travel Guys sent you. All right, coming up right here on the Travel Guys. I saw this list. This is very, very intriguing. This is fun for somebody like me who doesn't cruise. The things you need to know, about packing and so much more when you get ready to cruise. That's next here on the Travel Guys. Live and direct, it's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, here to make you a smarter traveler the next time you hit the road. I might have been a little misleading. The subject we're going to talk about is the things you want to check when you get on board the cruise ship. And Mark, where did this wonderful list, let's give credit where credit is due for this fine list.
Travelers United are the people, and Ned Levy is the man who compiled it. Ned has been a guest here on the Travel Guys before.
Yes.
And Travelers United is really a great travelers advocacy place. You can go visit their website, travelersunited.com. They do have a membership. You could support them if you like. But it just getting signing up for their updates and stuff like that will give you all kinds of things that will make you a smarter traveler. Speaking of which, this is a list, 20 items to complete in your cabin as soon as possible. Complete list at travelguysradio.com. In 3 minutes, I'm not going to get through all 20 of them. Some of them are more important than others. The first one on Ned's list is when you get on board the ship, unless you have signed up for the ship's cellular service phone plan, turn off your phone when the ship sails. Because otherwise, when the ship docks in different places, if your phone is on, you could be connected to different cellular services and get home and find a bill that you might have to argue or not be able to argue off of your phone bill. So make sure that you know what you're doing cell phone-wise and turn your phone off if you haven't signed up for a plan. When you get to your cabin or stateroom, make sure the bed is in the configuration you requested. If you're looking for a double bed or two twin beds, make sure that that's what it is, because the time that can be corrected is right when you're getting on the ship. If there are any extra open cabins or other people have issues and they can switch, things like that. So you want to identify things like that immediately. Other things you want to identify: are the outlets in your cabin working properly? On some cruise ships, you have to take your room key and insert it into a slot inside your room to activate all of the things going on in the room. So sometimes it's a two-step process, but obviously you don't want to sail with a room full of outlets that are not working. That's something you want to know before you leave. Also, if you purchased a Wi-Fi package, activate it immediately so that you know that it's working. And if it isn't, you can let people know, because usually if it isn't working, it may not be working for everyone. This is one that perhaps I've never done this, but it's on this list. Check for bed bugs. Pull down the covers, lift up the mattress, check for bed bugs. Sanitize your cabin. Different people feel different ways about this, but if you bring a few wet wipes and hit common surfaces, that's probably not a bad idea. Hypothetically, your cabin has been sanitized after the previous guest has disembarked at that particular port. You want to make sure that if the cruise ship has an app, that you've got that all set up and ready to go before sailing. Obviously, securing documents are important. This one's kind of cool. Some cruise lines now will stock the mini fridge in your room with seriously overpriced stuff. So here's one thing you can do. Now, if you're not going to use that stuff, get rid of it. And the way you get rid of it is you introduce yourself to your cabin steward, which is another thing on the list here, and then you make sure that you just ask them to remove all that stuff. Now there's more room in the fridge for your stuff, and you don't have the temptation of buying all of their overpriced stuff. Store your luggage under your bed. Sometimes your ship has an e-muster drill or a in-person muster drill. You have to be in place for those in person. So make sure that's like a really, really, really important thing. Anyway, that's just some things off the list, the complete list of things to do when you get on a cruise ship before you sail at TravelGuysRadio.com.
Awesome. Wow. A lot of things to get done when you first get there. You know, this is really important stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
I mean, I would imagine those that cruise, when they heard that, they say, yeah, I do all that stuff. All right, we are the Travel Guys, and when we come back after a short timeout, road reporter Clayton Whitehead has just returned from Switzerland. He, if you've never been, he's going to make you want to go. That's coming up right here on the show.
Those of you who saw Barry Manilow in concert at the Capital One Center here recently in Sacramento, I understand it was a terrific evening. Barry is getting up there in years, so if you would like to see him again, I have a suggestion for you. Barry does benefit concerts every other year in Palm Springs at Christmas time because he lives down there to support a variety of charities in the city that he lives in at the McCallum Theater. It's a much more intimate venue than the Capital One Center. Barry's not going to be doing this very much longer, so if you're a Barry Manilow fan, Sports Leisure Vacations would love to take you to Palm Springs on a pre-Christmas trip. Christmas lights, lunch on the Palm Springs aerial tramway, and a concert starring Barry Manilow at the McCallum Theater. You can check it out at sportsleisure.com.
Hey there, Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now you can follow along and keep track of the Travel Guys and our special guests at TravelGuysRadio.com. Returning from a trip about a week ago, we talked about it, Clayton Whitehead, the adventuresome one, the one that wants to go across the pond on a regular basis, because Mark does a lot of the local tours, if you will, but Clayton likes to go far away places and do very interesting tours. Welcome back to the Travel Guys, Clayton. Switzerland this time, I understand.
Yes, sir. I just spent 10 great days over the pond in the beautiful and neutral country of mm-hmm. Switzerland. It was amazing.
You had an itinerary that wasn't intended to cover the entire country. You hit a couple major cities, but you guys spent an extended period of time in the Swiss Alps.
Yes, this is actually an itinerary that I've done. This was the seventh time, and the entire tour is focused in the Bernese Oberlin region, or Canton, as they call it there. That's kind of the equivalent of a Swiss state. And Bern is the capital, but we passed through Bern rather quickly on our way to the little village of Vingen, which is perched on the side of the mountain called Eiger. One of the taller mountains in that particular section of the Alps, at an elevation of about 4,500 feet. It's just a small village that sits on this little shelf on the side of this huge mountain. The really unique thing about it is there's no highways or roads or streets or even lanes in or out of Vingen. The only way to get there is by a cog railroad or by a six-seat gondola.
So how do you get around once you get there?
Walk.
Oh,
as
wow.
I said, it's a rather small town. Our hotel was adjacent to the train station. We stayed there a full week. And every day we just went out and basically rode public transportation, which makes this an extremely unique tour. You can buy something called a Bernice Oberlin Pass, which is good on all the railroads, cog rails, funiculars, gondolas.
Excuse me. I know what a cog railroad is. It's the kind that grabs the track and works its way up.
Yeah.
And what was that other word?
Funicular.
A funicular.
Yeah, funiculars, gondolas, cable cars, and postal buses. You can actually ride around with the mailman, which is an accepted mode of transportation over there. So we went out every day and just went around. With kind of the climax, the pinnacle, if you will, being a day spent on the Jungfrau. Jungfrau Joch is one of the taller mountains in the Alps, but it has the unique distinction of being the highest mountain in the world that a human can go to the top of without climbing to get there. There is a train that takes you through a spiral tunnel up through from inside the mountain itself. So it's free of weather concerns.
Wow.
And it takes you all the way up to the top station, which is over 11,000 feet.
Wow.
And you can go outside, walk on a glacier, and eat chocolate and feel very lightheaded. It's a cheap high, but it was fun.
Let me ask you, you were a group of American tourists, 25 or 30 folks.
Yes.
And so who else did you find in Wengen?
A lot of Asian tourists, to be sure. And then a lot of Europeans. This particular section of Switzerland, I don't think has been overly discovered by Americans. And I liked it that way.
Is Switzerland one of your favorite countries in Europe?
Switzerland is without a doubt. You know, people are always asking me, because I travel for a living, what's your favorite place? And it's like, I can't just name one. But if anyone asks me what's the most beautiful place I've ever seen, it's Switzerland. And it is specifically the Lauterbrunnen Valley, which is in the Bernice Oberlin. It's this space specifically. It is absolutely the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my life. And I've been doing tours now for over 20 years to this valley. And it's never disappointed me. It's always just as good, if not better, than I remember.
So it's a summertime destination. Do they have a winter season also?
It's totally a winter destination as well. Skiing is big. But, of course, that's a very different experience. So, yeah, I think you could probably go back in the winter and it would be a totally different place.
For someone who, like me, who is not the best across the pond traveler, what would you tell me if I were thinking of a visit to Europe? It seems as though Switzerland might be one of the great jumping off points to start European adventures.
Switzerland is definitely, in terms of its beauty, its history, and in terms of it being, you know, American friendly, so to speak. Nearly everybody in the tourism industry understands English, so communicating is very easy. Though interestingly, Switzerland has four official languages. None of them are English. It's German, French, Italian, and then something called Romanish, which I've never quite figured out exactly what that language is. But certainly, of course, English is kind of the world's second language, and certainly in the tourism arena, everyone's going to be able to speak English. It's a very, very easy country to travel around in. Public transportation is amazing, and everything runs on precise Swiss timing. So don't show up for the 3:05 train at 3:06, or you will be train left.
Our guest is Clayton Whitehead with Sports Leisure Vacations, just returning from Switzerland. You took a group of Sports Leisure Vacationers with you. As we've talked about on this program, you offer, Sports Leisure offers a number of different kinds of trips based on your physical capabilities. Now, you're talking about going 11,000 feet and a town where walking is what you're going to do a lot of. What level of of physical abilities did this particular group need to have, Clayton, to go there? I mean, myself, 11,000 feet would be a challenge.
Yeah, definitely it could be a challenge for some people, but in all of our information, our literature, I made it very, very clear that altitudes and a lot of walking were going to be a part of the experience. On our 5-point scale, I rated it as a 4 with the activity level. And whenever I spoke about it at sales presentations or whatever, I kind of pushed it up to a 4+. Most of the group was up to the challenge. There were a few that had to do a little bit more resting and huffing and puffing, but we all made it through.
That's great.
If you were going to share a couple of tips for Travel Guys listeners who were thinking about a trip to Switzerland, what would you tell them?
Wow. Well, obviously you have to fly into some place and you have to fly out of some place, and that usually means Zurich or one of the other major cities. But I don't think the beauty of Switzerland, or hardly any country for that matter, is in big cities. I mean, we've got big cities here. We live in a big city for that matter. The beauty of Switzerland especially is the Alps, and the only way to really experience them is to get out into them. Whether you visit the Bernese Oberland or one of the other lovely regions of the country, you've just got to get out and you've got to walk. The trails are as organized as their rail system. Very well maintained, very well signed. It's easy to take a one-day or a multi-day hike there and not lose your way. They're just so well prepared there for visitors from all around the globe. And there's a formality about them. I mean, it's not like dropping into an Irish pub. I mean, they're super friendly. They're super accommodating. They're not overly warm. I certainly felt that we were important to them. That the money we were bringing in was important to them, and also the quiet respect that we gave to their country, I think, was very important to them. You know, I caution my groups, you may be proud to be an American, and if you are, I'm happy for you, but this isn't really the time and place to shout that. You know, this is a very quiet people. Mm-hmm. And they value people who respect that privacy and respect that quiet and respect that level of dignity. So this was the time for us just to be quiet and follow along and certainly have fun when it was a fun time, but just not to be over the top. And I think that's especially so in the current political situation that we're in. Okay. So, yeah.
Before I let you go, mm-hmm. One or maybe two, your favorite places in Switzerland?
Oh, well, going to the top of the Jungfrau, there's nothing that matches that experience. You're in the topest, the highest place a person can go without climbing to get there. So it's, you know, it's pretty nice, you know, just having that comfort and convenience to get to near the top, near the pinnacle of this mountain. And then when you walk out into the snow, it snowed nearly every night we were there. So even though it was July, you know, it snowed at night. And there's a giant glacier. And just being able to go out into that beautiful, pristine, it's beyond words.
Okay.
It's
so give me, beyond words. So for people who can't do 11,000 feet, give me a place in one of the cities you visited or down at the 4,000-foot level that really sticks with you.
All of these villages and mountains that we visited are a part of the Lauterbrunnen Valley. And Lauterbrunnen, I think, is the most beautiful village I've ever seen. It's the kind of village that you see in those calendars. You know, the calendars that have pretty pictures from all around the world? Lauterbrunnen Valley is what you see. It's just stunningly beautiful.
Amazing. I'm trying to picture all this. And like I say, like you pointed out, calendars, special pictures, things that you see that are extraordinary. A lot of times that's the area that they are. pretty impressive. I'm sure your travelers had a magnificent time. Post some pictures. See if you can find some photos if you have, and put them up on travelguysradio.com so folks can see you guys there if you have anything.
Will do.
We're going to take a time out and come back and talk a little bit about the Pacific Northwest, specifically Puget Sound, which, like Switzerland, in the summertime is an amazing place to visit. All that next right here on The Travel Guys.
Hi.
Hey there, it's Mark and Tom, The Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. Really like having interviews with Clayton when he returns from one of those trips. It also kind of gives me a kind of a feel of what it would be like to travel with Clayton. And he would, you know, he would be there to give you all of the nuances as to how to act and how to behave yourself when you're in another country, because he knows.
Yeah, he's been to Switzerland a number of times. One of the great things I love about this program, I'm just going to brag for a second here. On many travel programs that are aired, TV, radio, podcasts, whatever, you get tourism people who are promoting their destination, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's what those people are paid to do, and that's their job. Here, I'd like to think you get Clayton goes to Switzerland, comes back, and tells you some things that might be helpful when you go. And we're not trying to sell you a trip to Switzerland or anything like that. We're just trying to give you some information that might not only help you there, but help you other places. So I think that's one of the cool aspects of our program, is that because we have this resource. And next week, by the way, we are going to focus on Japan and tell you some great things about traveling in Japan, maybe give you some helpful tips. Okay, speaking of having gone places, last week we talked a little bit about a recent trip over to Fort Bragg on the California coast, and I suggested that the Mendocino Botanical Garden and perhaps the short skunk train ride and the funkiness of Fort Bragg, that it didn't used to be that way. It used to be an old mill town. But now it's kind of changed. It's hard to get to, which I think is part of the charm of some of those places on the coast, and the road on the coast isn't completely reopened yet. So if you've never been to Fort Bragg, and you're looking to escape the heat, especially if you can go during the week, because the town gets a little crowded on the weekends, but hotel prices are a lot cheaper during the week. Okay, last week, spent a good time on Puget Sound, and it strikes me that this is one of the most undiscovered places in the country. It's not that there are not tourism crowds in the summertime, but they're still manageable. And there are a lot of things on Puget Sound. If you don't know the geographic location, we're talking about west of Seattle. Puget Sound is the body that separates the western side of Washington State from the Seattle side, let's call it. It's kind of a peninsula, if you would, in shape. It's where Highway 101 goes up around the top of it's the finish of Highway 101, if you will. That's the major road there. Olympic National Park is also up on the peninsula. But anyway, I wanted to give you some ideas. If you've never been up to Puget Sound, it really is a remarkably beautiful place. The average temperatures in the summertime are in the 80s. It cools off in the at nighttime, so it's a great place to escape the heat. Some great food stops up there. Chain restaurants. Anthony's Restaurant is a seafood restaurant around the Sound. We go to the one in Des Moines, which is a Seattle suburb, and it's right on the water. It's a great spot. There's also Ivar's and Salty's are two other chains that I would suggest to you. Bainbridge Island is our destination on Puget Sound. So you take, there are two ways to get there. You can take ferry boats across the Sound from several locations in or north of Seattle to different destinations on the other side, or you can drive around the Sound, which generally takes longer, although when you go to a ferry boat, you just don't drive up and get on. You've got to wait for the boat to get there and then get unloaded and loaded and get off on the other side. So sometimes if you're not going to make the next boat, then it's better to drive around. Something to consider. We stay at a place called the Clearwater Resort in a town called Suquamish, which is one of the Native American folks' towns over there. It's also where the grave of Chief Seattle, whose native name is not pronounced quite Seattle, but that's the Anglican pronunciation. and his grave is there. What an interesting person. If you ever want to, if you're a history buff, Chief Seattle is somebody to look into. Anyway, the Clearwater Resort at Suquamish is really, really a nice place to stay. It is a hotel casino with an asterisk. There's a modern hotel with a nice casino and restaurants on the property. And just a little ways away from that is a wonderful, they call it a resort building. It's a couple of years older. Every room has a beautiful view of Puget Sound.
Cool.
So that's the big attraction for us. If you're going to go there, you might as well see the sound. When you come back to your hotel room each afternoon, you open up the curtain, and there it is. And beautiful big rooms, Clearwater Resort, it's called. On Puget Sound. I just highly recommend it. It's not as expensive as some places. There are food facilities there. If you want to play in the casino, that's fine. If you don't, you would never even know it was there. So, and plus, they are incredibly friendly, nice people. So, I would call it perhaps the best value and the best place that I stay in with a group anywhere in the country. Clearwater Resort in Suquamish, on the on Puget Sound. The little towns on Puget Sound are really the big attraction. Paulsbo, which isn't spelled the way it's pronounced, but a wonderful little town real close to where we stay, with all kinds of restaurants and shops and the like. Port Orchard and Port Gamble, two places that harken back to the lumber days on the Sound, when a lot of lumber was being cut down and carried out. Both little tiny towns with wonderful places to visit. Squim is another spot up there. Of course, the Olympic National Park, you can drive up to it very easily. The main road is simple. One of the great things at Hurricane Ridge at the park is, in this one area, you can walk, let's call it 100 yards, and you can see on one side a spectacular mountain range to the south, and walk 100 yards, and on a clear day, you can see Victoria and Vancouver across the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Probably one of the best views anywhere in the country. I mean, absolutely. And further north of the Sound are the San Juan Islands and little town of Laconer on the mainland, and a whole nother set of places that you could go and spend 4 or 5 days. But Puget Sound in Washington State, I absolutely think, is one of the best places to go to. Dare I say, it's kind of a little Cape Codish, but if you like mountains and green and water, and if you travel, it's got all the stuff, plus incredibly nice people and prices that are not too ridiculous. I mean, comparatively around the country, you will pay less to stay in Puget Sound and to eat there than you would pay to stay in on the Central California coast, let's say Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, something like that.
When and how did you first start taking people to Puget Sound?
Oh, gosh. We've been around 46 years. I would say at least 30, 40 years ago, but it was about 15 years ago that we discovered this particular itinerary, and about a decade ago I found this resort. And it's just, gosh, it's still, if you wanted to get away from Sacramento, you know, you worked hard and you just wanted to get away for a while, this would be the place to do it. I mean, it absolutely would be the place to do it.
Now, do you guys, what do you fly into Seattle?
We do. We fly in and then ride the ferry boats. Ironically, in this trip, low tides, incredibly low tides. We're on a motor coach. It's hard for the tides, for us to clear the ramps when the tides are at their bottom, and we hit a couple low tides eliminated. But we went to another town, Port Townsend, I didn't even mention, because one of our ferry boats got canceled one day. And Port Townsend is absolutely one of the places you want to visit when you get over to the Sound.
Wow. So much fun today on the show. We've been to a lot of places. I'm exhausted. I might have to take a nap out after this, or go over to Rudy's for some clam chowder. That's great. And folks, remember now, next week we're gonna talk to one of Mark's travel gals who's been off to Spain, right?
Absolutely. Yes, we're gonna talk about Japan next week here on the
Japan. All right, that's a wrap, Mark. Final word.
Be sure to dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you next Saturday at 11 o'clock.